Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Lindsay Moran is the author of Blowing My Cover, My Life as a Spy, which I believe says it all. And she's with us on the phone. Good evening, Lindsay.
Good evening. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. You heard the, I hope you heard the clip from Sum of All Fears, which is one of the countless films that have had CIA as a plot point. I guess I'll just start this whole thing off with, what's the difference between the fiction and the reality? Are those movies close to the mark or no?
There's a world of difference between the fiction and the reality. And I feel like I've been waging wars against misconceptions about the CIA for ages. And one of the things that I tried to do in my book, Blowing My Cover, was to really show the human side of being a spy and to debunk some of the Hollywood myths of what it's like to be a CIA operative. It was very different from James Bond to Jason Bourne. Spies are often conveyed as these kind of emotionless, heartless, almost superhumans, and that's really far from the case.
Well, I'm reading about you, though, and the things that you have to say about your experience with the CIA, and honestly, the things that you admit to and talk about strike me as being prime movie material. I mean, there's a thing in here where what's interesting is when I worked for the CIA, I was lying all the time.
Right? That's true.
Okay, well, there we go. Right there, we've got the beginning of a movie. So you're lying all... I got so many questions. We're going to do this till about 7:45, by the way. We're making way for Big Ten basketball a little bit later. But when you work for the CIA, and by the way, they are hiring right now, do you get to tell anybody?
You know, it's interesting. The CIA kind of leaves it up to your discretion.
Really?
If you're in the clandestine service, yes. And a lot of people don't realize that the bulk of the CIA workforce are actually overt employees, analysts and administration people,
right,
and folks in the Directorate of Science and Technology. And the clandestine service, which I was in, sometimes referred to as the Directorate of Operations, is actually the smallest cadre within the CIA. And of course, you don't want to bandy it about. You're told not to tell people. But in my case, there were a handful of people who knew. Both my parents knew and my brother knew. They knew that I worked at the CIA, but honestly, it wasn't until my book came out that they actually knew what I was doing. And my mother said she was so happy that she didn't know what was actually going on.
How long were you with the CIA?
I was with the agency from 98 until 2003. So I joined in my late 20s and left in my early to mid-30s.
Were you recruited? I love saying that.
What? I was not. It's kind of a funny story. It had been my lifelong dream to join the CIA. I grew up in Washington, D.C. My father did top secret work for the government, not with the agency, but for the Navy.
Yeah.
Although at the time I thought he was a spy. And my childhood hero was Harriet the Spy.
Yes.
And then that kind of morphed into a fascination with the Bond series, which now I'm sort of sick of.
Yeah, I understand that. Sure.
But so I wasn't recruited. In fact, it was after college, and my father was one of the few people I spoke to about my desire to join the agency, and he said, "Well, they'll never take you. You're far too liberal and freewheeling." And it was almost—I have to tell you—it was almost in an effort to prove my father wrong that I applied to the CIA, and this was back in the pre-internet days. I folded up my resume and put it in an envelope marked CIA, Langley, Virginia.
No kidding.
And sent it away.
Do they recruit, or is that just a Hollywood myth? Because you see films where...
No, they do recruit. They do
really
recruit. There's a number of college campuses which the CIA is forbidden from recruiting on those college campuses. Although, I think they find their way around that.
I mean, how would they know, right? They're the CIA.
Yeah. But they do actively recruit. I don't know that I would have been the type of person that they would have come after, but I sent in my resume and was almost immediately then approached by the CIA and started the very lengthy process of being hired for the clandestine service.
There's a reference to something that you call the Myers-Briggs test. What is that?
Yes. The CIA is big on the Myers-Briggs test. It's a battery of questions, a series of questions, a psychological test.
Yeah.
And that everyone who's a candidate for the clandestine service takes. And they tend to hire almost exclusively ENTJs. And I won't get into the nitty gritty of what that actually means. But it's extrovert, thinking, intuitive, I think, and judging. And it's very interesting because that is a particular psychological type, extrovert probably being the most important component of that, that they're looking for in their clandestine operatives. What a lot of people probably don't realize is that the skills and characteristics and qualities that you have to be a good CIA operative, it comes down to like social skills, street smarts, ability to think on your feet. You know, you don't have to be the smartest person in the world, but you've got to have a lot of moxie and a lot of adaptability, I would say.
And I would think a lot of courage and a lot of self-confidence at the same time. I mean,
yes,
to say the least.
And that brings with it the good and bad, because the clandestine service, you know, we were diverse to a certain extent, but there were a lot of pretty big egos there. There's a lot of people, of course, who believe that they're kind of invincible, and the CIA's rigorous training program leads us to believe that we truly are invincible. So, and then you're doing that, you know, you've got people who are confident, who have big egos, who are extroverted, who are storytellers, and I think, you know, all of that would have applied to me. And then you're asking them or requiring them to do a job that they can't tell anyone about.
So, right, they can't be extroverted at all. In fact, they're supposed to, like, be secret, actually. You know?
Exactly.
It's the opposite.
Exactly. And the hardest thing for me, not the hardest thing, but one thing that was kind of hard was, you know, we were told I had a cover job, and my cover job was as a diplomat. But when I was in training, my cover job was like as a bureaucrat in some, you know, nebulous, vaguely named office called Regional Affairs with the State Department. And we weren't, we were told, you know, when you go back to Harvard reunions or you go to family gatherings or whatever, you should make yourself sound as boring as possible. You know,
wow.
So it's a struggle because at the back of your mind, you know, you're doing one of the most exciting jobs on the face of the earth, and yet you have to make it sound like you're kind of in a dead end job and just a lifelong government drone.
Well, so part of that they depict in the films, that part is true. I mean, they have CIA operatives downplaying their actual roles and not talking about at a party, like not really mingling with folks and just sort of laying back. I mean, I remember Tom Cruise was walking around. Okay, never mind. Just to get to this real quick, the CIA has diversified. It has a female director. It has a website where they're inviting folks to apply. They have gone to, you know, social media. It's like the secret agency is going public. Do you know what I mean?
They are. I mean, I think they're making a goodwill effort to diversify their workforce. I mean, I, for a long time, have maintained that the CIA's biggest secret is that its best spies are women.
That's what you
and
say.
They
yes.
certainly have made great strides, I think, in increasing, in hiring more women for the clandestine service, increasing their opportunities. On the analyst side, the team that, excuse me, that sought and finally found Osama bin Laden was an all-female team. Where I think the CIA still has a long way to go is in ethnically diversifying the workforce. you know, for a long time, and through the time that I was there, it tends to be a real kind of very white, good old boy network.
Well, it would seem to me that with the diverse population of the world, and therefore the diverse countries that the CIA would want to obtain some kind of information from, that it would make sense if you were sending somebody in a clandestine mission undercover, so to speak, that that person looked like the place they're going. I mean,
looked like the place they're going and spoke the language fluently. No,
yes.
You're completely right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the CIA has for a long time, I think, struggled with this wanting to recruit and retain first or second generation immigrants who more often than not tend to be even more patriotic than those of us who were born in America and grew up here and have over time maybe taken advantage of our freedoms and democratic ideals.
Right.
But the CIA is always struggling with that, because to get those people through the very rigid and draconian security process that it takes to get hired by the CIA, you know, it's hard. If you've got a, if you've got relatives in Iran or China or wherever, you're going to be naturally suspect.
Yeah, because you could be compromised. I know that from watching TV.
and it is true. You know, it is true. I mean, one of the things that's so fascinating, I think, about the world of human intelligence, which was the world that I was involved in, is it's inherently flawed, because unlike, you know, the NSA, which listens in on phone conversations or tracks emails and cyber chatter, human intelligence, which is the realm and the bread and butter of the CIA, is reliant totally on human beings, and human beings are flawed, you know, from the agent that you recruit in the field, who has his own set of vulnerabilities and motivations and agendas, to the CIA operative, who also has his or her vulnerabilities and motivations. And there's a lot of careerism there. You know, we'd like to think that every CIA operative is recruiting that source that has the information about the ticking time bomb. Mm-hmm. 9 times out of 10, that is not the case. You know, CIA officers are trying to get ahead in their careers, and to get ahead in your career as a clandestine officer, you have to get recruitments. So in my experience at the agency, and I think throughout history at the agency, there's been an emphasis on quantity over quality of recruitments, and that's a problem.
Would you recommend a career in the CIA if somebody was interested?
I always recommend a career in the CIA, except maybe to my own kids. I have 2 teenage boys who I liken to foreign agents or terrorists themselves. You know,
I'm sure they would.
All of my skills of manipulation and psychological subterfuge and all of my spy skills come into play as a mom. But I do recommend the career, largely because I do think that human intelligence, I do think the CIA performs a very important function for our country. I do think it plays a role in keeping our country safe, in keeping us better informed. And I want the CIA, as an American, I want the CIA to attract the best people. And so these recent efforts to diversify the workforce, to get the body of the agency more in tune with the rest of the world, I think is great. So, you know, it's funny because my book is kind of pokes fun at the agency. I've been critical of the agency in the past for a number of things, but I still believe in the place, and I still hope that it will attract the best and the brightest.
Quickly, can you tell us the story about Macedonia, where in what I'm reading here, you felt was like the most threatening part of the job that you had had?
Sure. I mean, it's kind of funny retrospectively, but I was actually going riding my bike up a hill in Macedonia to service what we call a signal site. That is, I was going to make a chalk mark on a water fountain.
And now, wait a minute. You really?
In Macedonia at that time.
You were really going to do that? That's really what happens, making a chalk mark?
Yes,
holy
it's
cow!
Kind of funny. Some of the tricks of the trade of spycraft are remarkably non-techie. You know, they're remarkably, you'd think they're archaic, but we still use dead drops and signal sites and all that kind of stuff. But in any event, I was riding my bike fast down the hill after making my chalk mark that my agent was going to see later, and a motley crew of three, they turned out to be Macedonian soldiers, but they were sort of in uniform, sort of not, carrying AK-47s. I had seen them on my way up the hill, and when they saw me, they jumped back into the bushes, and I was kind of terrified. I had my hair up in a baseball cap, and I think they took me for perhaps an Albanian rebel, but they jumped back into the bushes. For all I knew, they were readying their weapons, and luckily I spoke the local language well enough to be able to kind of hurl some invective or ask them what was going on. And then they realized that I was American and came out and started speaking to me. And one of them I actually started to develop as a source. But that was one of those, moments where I thought I had to think quickly on my feet and wondered if I would get out of there alive.
Well, I'm glad you did, Lindsay. We're out of time, unfortunately. I thank you so much for being with us and hope to have you back again. It's Lindsay Moran, former clandestine officer for the CIA, the author of Blowing My Cover, My Life as a Spy.